Education for Tuesday, April 24th, 2007. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Really, I appreciate all you being here. We have several bills to work on work session today, members. We're going to start from the bottom of the agenda today and work our way up. The top two on the agenda, Representative Hunt would be available if we need him to in those work sessions. So I am going to open up a work session on House Bill 3338. And Mr. Olson, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3338 was heard first in the Subcommittee on Education Innovation, where it was sent to the full with a due pass as amended recommendation. It was then heard in the full committee on the 20th, and it comes back to you today with a couple new amendments addressing some of the questions raised the last meeting. The point of the measure is to create an education system design team. The dash 4 amendment replaces there's a dash 3 and a dash 4 amendment. I'll speak first to the dash 4. Replaces the entire text of House Bill 3338 and makes the following changes. Changes the focus of the education system design team. Quote, design a new legislative process for review of and decision making regarding the governor's unified 2009 and 2011 K-20 public education budget request. Change the membership to be 5 representatives, 5 senators, and a representative from the governor's office. Direct the team to, quote, work with the Quality Education Commission, post-secondary Quality Education Commission established by the governor, and with work groups created by the Joint Boards of Education. Quote, design a legislative system to review a comprehensive pre-kindergarten through higher education budget and policy presentation, and in collaboration with the Office of the Governor and work groups created by the Joint Boards of Education, design and recommend methods of financially supporting an education system with the 40-40-20 goals as spelled out, 40% high school graduates, 40% with 40% have an associate's degree, 40% have a bachelor's degree, and 20% have a high school diploma. And it authorizes the design team to pre-session file legislation and replaces the $1 million appropriation with a blank line. The last two are the changes from the last session, the last committee meeting. The dash 3 amendment is identical but does not include the authorization for the design team to pre-session file legislation. Those were the two issues that were discussed as possible additional amendment. This has a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Kopp, are you comfortable with the dash 4 amendments?
Thank you, Chair Buckley. If I had to put my life in anybody's hands, I would put it in the hands of our staff member, Mr. Olson. I think he's done the job, and it looks really good.
Very good. In that case, I'd entertain a motion on dash 4s, and then we would have discussion of the dash 4. Representative Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 4 amendment to House Bill 3338.
Representative Dahl has moved the dash 4 amendment to House Bill 3338. Is there discussion? My goodness, there's no discussion. Thank you, Representative Roblin. Representative Compton, you're good to go?
Aye.
With no objections, are there any objections? Hearing none, so amended. And at this point, I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3338 to the House floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means Committee by prior reference.
As amended.
As amended.
That's right.
I think I had the due pass as amended.
Yeah. Representative Dahlem has moved House Bill 3338 as amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
By prior reference.
Thank you, Representative. It's a lot of words to remember.
That is.
Any discussion? Representative Kremel, just for your information, the dash 4s do include the two changes that the committee discussed at the last hearing.
Legislative.
Representative Roblin's pointing them out to you.
It allows them to pre-file bills. Looking at
those. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the
so the dash 4 is what was a
dash 4 which okay. were just adopted.
Okay.
And we have a motion now on the bill itself. And is there any further discussion? Hearing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative
Clem. Excuse.
Representative
Dahl. Aye.
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 Excused. Aye. The motion carries, and good luck in Ways and Means, House Bill 3338. With that, I will close the...
All right, Petey.
Well, I was going to say that sounds like a funeral march.
And sincerely, good luck. Good luck.
Yes, House Bill 3338.
We'll close the work session of House Bill 3338 and open up a work session on House Bill 3178.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3178. Directs school districts, education service districts, and public bodies to make available to the public lists of vacant and unused buildings and portions of buildings that may be suitable for operation of a public charter school. Directs that lists be provided to developing or operating public charter schools within 30 days of written request. Committee, this came from the Subcommittee on Education Innovation with a due pass as amended recommendation. On the 12th, but then on the 13th in the full committee there's some discussion, and so we have a new amendment, the dash 2, which first of all, it retains the clarification that good faith negotiations must include negotiations with a public charter school governing board with an approved charter proposal. And the new part of the dash 2 compared to the dash 1 amendment adds back the statement that's in current law stating that, quote, nothing in this subsection requires the owner of a building on the list to sell or lease a public charter school, a building, or any portion of a building. This has a does not have a subsequent referral.
Thank you, Mr. Rolson. I appreciate the information. Members, I have been assured by the parties involved that there is agreement on this amendment, so I would entertain a motion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 2 amendment to House Bill 3178.
Representative Dahlin has moved the dash 2 amendment to House Bill 3178. Is there discussion?
I wanted to say, Mr. Chair, that I had a dash 3, and I was really happy to see Representative Roblin's dash 2. I'm happy to concur.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cromwell.
I don't know if I have to or not, but just because I do work for a public charter school, I will go ahead and declare a potential conflict of interest.
So noted. Any additional?
Yeah. I just want to say, you know, the intent when Representative Dahl and I were just looking at this was not to force things to happen, but to make sure that they are available for people. And that last part really makes it clear that local school districts still have control over their buildings. And if they don't want to put it on the list because they're planning on selling or doing something else, that's the choice that they should have. And we never intended that. But we do want, when they have some buildings that are out there, we think that charter schools should have a right to look at them. And it also includes other public entities that they wouldn't necessarily have thought about, but when they ask for it, they should get it. But school districts should still have the right to say yes and no to their buildings and how they're used. So that's what that last bit does.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Dahlin.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that it's necessary, but I too have a potential conflict of interest. My daughter is teaching at a charter school right now.
I thought you were going to say that you were thinking of going back to work.
Well, she's...
so no.
He has a daughter to support him.
I have a wife to support me. I don't need a daughter. Oh.
Thank you for putting that on the record, Representative. Any further discussion? Any objection to these amendments? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dahl.
I move House Bill 3178 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Dahl moves House Bill 3178 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk please call the roll? Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion carries. Ripson Roblin, would you like to carry this on the floor for us? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you for your work on this as well. I'm going to close the work session for House Bill 3178. That's a very good... I would entertain a motion at this point, members, to suspend the rules and reopen the work session on House Bill 3338 so Representative Wisnick could vote, if Representative Wisnick would care to.
Thank you. I'll vote aye, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rubin.
I move that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Wisnett to vote on House Bill 3338.
Would he declare how he's going to vote before?
One thing we know is it won't affect the outcome.
Okay. It has been moved, and with no objection, Representative Wisnett, how would you like to vote?
Aye, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wisnett votes aye. Thank you very much, members. I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on the House.
Close that one first.
I didn't really open it. I think I got stopped.
I don't think you have to. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. My understanding is that I believe you don't have to reopen the work session. You just have to suspend the rules to allow them to
vote. I don't think we closed the one that we just had.
I'll reclose it. I'll double close it. I'm going to double close that work session on House Bill 3178. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3179.
Okay.
Mr. Olson, please keep the committee under control here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3179. Changes information that a school district board may request from a public charter school applicant, changes the criteria for approving a public charter school proposal, specifies time periods for appeal or denial, appeal of a denial of application for a public charter school for the State Board of Education review, allows a public charter school or sponsor to request State Board review of whether specified provisions have been violated, declares emergency effective July 1st. There's a Dastri amendment here, which was considered also in the subcommittee. The Dastri amendment restores languages allowing the school districts to require additional information relevant to the formation or operation of a charter school. The previous language was, it originally was require, then it was changed to be request, and now it's back to require. Providing the additional information was needed to, quote, ensure that the school board and the school meet the charter school meet the requirements of federal and state law and board policies that support the legislative intent of goals listed in the statute. It also would add into statute the option of a conditional approval of a public charter school based on those two previous conditions, federal and state law and board policies supporting legislative intent and goals in the statute.
That's what they want.
The amendment also gives 150 days by 120 in the original bill for the Department of Ed to complete its appeal review, and adds the timeline of the appeal could be changed by mutual consent between the applicant and the state board. This was sent, we were somewhat short on time at the subcommittee meeting, and it was sent to the full without recommendation, I think in case there needed to be further discussion in the full committee.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Members, just going to refresh ourselves where we were on this bill, and I can't recall whether we had assigned anyone to look into this further in particular, or whether we just had held this over because we didn't have time to get a full discussion.
We didn't have these amendments. We sent a group to work on this one and to work out the language, and Mr. Green is here, and he was one of the people, at least, to help work with another person, Karin. I actually said it right this time. And so...
I'm so proud of you.
And she's not even here to hear that I said Karin. It's really sad.
He got it, actually. He nailed it. So, but she did also meet with me prior to her departure and said she was fine with this amendment.
And I think we've kind of come... I mean, I'm not saying that everybody's totally excited about it, but what these amendments do is it... The require means that they can require them to address these issues. And I think that was the intention all along. I don't think we should have made that request. It does need to be required. School districts should have that authority. The next part basically says that the school boards can certainly deny it. And I think there was the way the language was written before, it was kind of either, you kind of almost had to approve it if it didn't do things. And there are reasons why school districts legitimately should say no to a charter school proposal. And this just says how to do that. Then the last part of the whole bill, the part that wasn't amended, but I think is probably the most important part, is it puts some time limits so that everybody knows how long it's going to take to get through some things. I also believe that the provisional one is a good one. Some of the charter schools get upset with that because they think that was used just as a ploy. They put so many restrictions on it. But because they've tightened down what the restrictions are, I still think it's appropriate. School boards have to make some tough decisions on charter schools, and one of the things they want is to make sure that they're viable and are going to make it. And so most of those conditions that I think they put on it are just that, to make sure that they have the backing they need to get to where they need to go. So I think these address those issues.
Thank you, Representative Roblin. Representative Dahl.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. In my own community, we're in the middle of one of these heated debates. This language would, I think, be most useful, having helped establish two charter schools and served on a school board. It is imperative that the school boards can request and get the information they need. And for that reason, I think the dash three gets the job done.
I would entertain a motion on the amendment.
Anyway, do you need them all?
I think we just need, do we need a dash three?
Just the dash three? Just
Mr. Chair, Representative Roblin, Representative Dahl, dash three, I believe, incorporates all the previous ones.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendments to House Bill 3179.
Representative Roblin has moved the dash three amendments to House Bill 3179. Is there further discussion?
I'm
Representative Greenough.
I didn't have the advantage of any of this.
That's true.
Discussions, and I know one of the three school boards I represent is still opposed to it. I think that's where I'm...
Which one? Yeah.
I have a note that says even with the amendment they're still opposed to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I don't have a date on it, so I'm having a little trouble. Portland Public Schools continues to have concerns with HB 3179 as amended.
Different than concerns.
I talked to their lobbyist this morning during the floor session to make certain that the language was appropriate.
I keep suggesting it might be nice if the lobbyists talk to me about
Kevin,
that.
That would be nice.
I can only hold accountable those that talk to me.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Representative Runick, I'd welcome a courtesy no vote if you'd like to take one.
No, I think I'd do a courtesy yes.
All right.
Some people get carried away.
The request that if anybody ever sees a Portland Public School lobbyist, they ask them to check in with me before they have to do it.
Very good. Any further discussion on the dash three amendments?
Thank you.
Any objection to the dash three amendments? Hearing none, so amended. Representative Cook, would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I recommend that House Bill, I move House Bill 3179 with the dash three amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Comp has moved House Bill 3179 to the House floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there discussion?
Who's the primary pusher behind this bill?
Domino.
Yeah.
Roblin?
These two.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
I would say that the primary people who pushed this would be Karen Hikus and that and her group, who wanted to have some clarification with regard to the length of time, especially the back part when it starts talking about when what timelines have to be in place. Some of these things go on for an awful long time, and I'm one of those people who says just tell them no. I mean, just get on with the life and do it, but don't just hang along. And I think if you were to ask the school board people, they would agree that we need to have some stuff to tell timelines, but they might not have agreed with that stuff completely, but they're, I think we've got language now that makes it relatively safe.
We're in with Nancy Reagan. Just say no.
Representative
that's
true,
too.
Mr. Chair, I think for the people that worked on that and for Representative Crummell, I think the charter school people were concerned about all the material you were asking, too.
Right.
Which did not get changed.
Some of it did not get changed.
That's true.
All the what you were asking?
Some of the charter school people would have liked some of the changes that now did not get changed.
As far as requirements of up front, what you're going to do, because they say that their position is we don't know when we're going to be able to do it, or you know, you're asking us to tell you know how you're going to do this. So.
Yeah, I agree. I would say they're not totally happy. I don't think the school board is totally happy.
Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Clem.
Excused.
Representative
Dahl. Aye.
Representative
Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Aye.
I think it's okay.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. Representative Dahlin, would you care to carry this bill for us on the floor?
I certainly will carry this bill on the floor.
Thank you very much. Members, the next two bills we have a choice of either going into work session now, if you feel pretty straightforward to you. We did have the hearing on previously. If not, we can take a recess till 2:30, and Representative Hunt is available if we feel we need to have Representative Hunt here to answer questions you might have. So
on which bill?
On the next two on our list are House Bill 3344 and House Bill 3295. We'll take them separately. But they both are bills that we heard in the... did we hear this in the
full
committee?
Yes. No. Mr. Chair, we did hear these in the full committee when we met on Monday, the 16th.
Correct. So I am willing to... let's step into this and then see how far we get. We get stuck without the ability to get the information required, then we will recess till Representative Hunt is available if necessary. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3295. And Mr. Olson, if you would please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3295 establishes a principal residence property tax exemption from local option property taxes for dwelling units of senior citizens and persons with disabilities with a household income of $32,000 or less, with an inflation index linked to the U.S. city average consumer price index. Applies to local option property taxes approved after January 1, 2008, and to tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2008. What is new since we last discussed this is a -1 amendment that clarifies by adding a definition of local option property tax. That definition includes, in addition to local option ad valorem property tax, quote, a local option tax that permits a school district to issue bonds payable from that tax, unquote. This was to clarify, there's some discussion about this, excluding people from bond levies. This amendment does that. This has a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Rulison.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenlee.
Can I ask a question, Mr. Olson?
Yes.
It also is done in this one you said. My question, Mr. Olson, is this. I really continue to have this memory at the back of my head that says something about the Equal Protection Clause.
Mm.
And how some... And we were talking about a different... We were talking during annexation about the ability to exclude some of the increased property tax over the first 10 years or something, and got back an opinion that said that was a violation of the Equal Protection Clause. Are we not in danger of doing something just like that in this case? And I may be misapplying, taking something I heard from one story and applying it to another story. And I didn't understand it to begin with. And it was in... Actually, it was in Representative Robles. Maybe he can help me a little with this.
Representative Green, Mr. Chair, I'm afraid I don't have any further light to shed on that, but we could see if we get legislative counsel up to help clarify if we need to.
I think we need that because I think, the some of the others had to do with deferrals. And if you defer it, that's not a problem because they eventually has to be paid. It's the exemption issue that may have an issue with regard to if you exempt one class. Now, we have done it with, my belief is, with veterans.
Yeah.
So it must have been vetted there, and I certainly haven't heard anything. But that doesn't mean that we've solved the problem. All it means is no one's filed suit against it saying it's an unequal treatment. The problem with a lot of our bills is they only become unconstitutional if it's challenged, and I don't think anybody's challenged anything with regard to that. So I don't know the answer. But I know that it is an issue that gets discussed. So I would like to see it because, from my perspective, deferrals are easier, and I think we already have a deferral for people.
Only continues to apply for a deferral.
Yep. Right.
And that builds a lien against their house
property.
That's
right.
Settled by the estate.
Right.
Which very few people take.
Right.
Representative Clinton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the annexation bill is one of the ones that
where
I followed very closely. It's one of my co-sponsored bills. The deal is you can discriminate. You just have to have a rational basis for discrimination. That's the test the Supreme Court uses on anything. You can discriminate. Is there a rational basis for it? So like in Measure 37, when the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that it was valid, the rational basis for discrimination was that one person had owned their property prior to the rules becoming to effect and everybody else hadn't, so therefore they were entitled to rights and other people people weren't, because that's the rational basis for discrimination. Same with veterans. The rational basis for discrimination is veterans provided some service, others didn't. So the question really just would become legally, are somebody who is in a senior citizen dwelling unit, someone with disability, rationally different, or in some way rationally discreetly different than other populations, and it's a not race, not sexual orientation, whatever categories you can't discriminate on. So my feeling is the biggest problem with the annexation thing was not so much that they got their taxes deferred, it was that they were receiving all these city services while still not paying taxes. The way we got around that is you defer the entire annexation, so they stay getting their particular services and stay paying their lower property tax rate to the entity they pay, and then once they start getting the services, then they start paying the property taxes. So you defer the entire annexation, and then you bring them all in at one time. I think this would be... I think it would stand up the way the veterans do, essentially.
Why
myself,
shouldn't anybody under 32,000 income?
That's the question here. Is it a unique enough group? Right,
the issue is seniors, right, under a certain level versus anyone under a certain level.
See, it's 62 years old, I believe. In
2 years old, yeah.
I mean, you could ask the same question about Medicare. Why do you get Medicare at that age? We do discriminate based on age.
There was a reason behind Medicare was put in, is because that's when commercial insurance generally stopped.
So that was the rational basis for discrimination.
Representative Lynn, did you have...
Yes. My question is, I know this will go to the Revenue Committee, but do we have any idea how much it will impact on revenue?
Mr. Olson? Mr. Chair, representatives, I have a couple points. One is, on the second question, revenue, I only have the potential revenue impact, because with the large amount of bills, they haven't had a chance to work it yet, since this will be going to revenue. So I'm afraid I can't shed any light on that.
This is only on taxes that haven't been levied yet.
That's correct.
On the issue of Constitution, Legislative Council is checking the file, and we'll come up in a little bit to see if they can help answer some of those questions. So what I told Legislative Council, because they're covering for a couple people, is that if we needed to, we could move to the next bill and then reopen this work session when they got here. They're going to get here as soon as they can, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Yes, just a follow-up question. By passing this bill, are we impacting the local government? The counties collect taxes. We are just taking away their local control by doing that. If we deferral, still they have to pay some time, but this is completely just write-off.
Representative Lee, you're correct. That's how I interpret the bill, that this would allow for a percentage of the population of a county or a district, if it's a local option, to opt out of paying for it, and they would not recover that revenue.
For future taxes.
Yes. And so, if I may follow up, which will impact the education of funding in the local level?
Mm-hmm. But the argument is that this makes it easier to pass those taxes. If you, when you start to pass taxes, say, well, okay, senior citizens, don't worry, they'll be okay. So the argument, that's why they want this, so it'll make it easier to pass the tax. Probably because so many senior citizens vote. In a sense, the argument was it'll help rather than hurt. That's a theory.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative. Representative Clem.
And this is only applicable to the local option portion, right?
Right.
And to me, the basic premise behind all of these things that have to do with kind of homestead rights or grandfathering rights is that property values are shooting up like crazy in this state due to all the influx. And people who are in the non-likely to earn more income ability, so that's people with a disability who can't work likely, and they're depending on inflation factors from their SSI, and people on Social Security who are, some are working obviously past now 62, a lot of people are. But the theory is that all these property values are going up, and people like me who are in my prime earning age group should be able to also make more money. Therefore, we can afford these new property values. The effect on our taxes of all these property values. But these folks can't, because they are living off of Social Security cost of living adjustments by Congress, and people with disabilities are. So I think that's the policy thing. The political one is obviously they think they can get things passed, but I'm trying to analyze the policy implications and not the political side.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dolan.
Group memory, and could be wrong. The wealthiest group of people in the nation are people over the age of 65.
In terms of wealth, yeah.
Which in terms of wealth.
Says all the time.
But that's why this bill caps it only those who are under $32,000.
Yes, but
but that's income.
I can move. I'm going to go read the law. I think I can move my income to where I'm under 32.
Gotcha.
What?
So we yes, I can.
We be exempting you, Representative Dolan?
Yeah.
It's already been right there. Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things with regards to the tax exemptions that have been done in other parts of the statute. I do know that some of those exemptions are actually paid through a fund through the treasurer's office. So the local government does not necessarily have an impact when there is an exemption of property taxes because those taxes are paid from a fund within the state. The question then becomes, though, what is the fund from the state and what kind of an impact would that have if this bill were to pass from the standpoint of the exemption? And actually, I should correct myself. I think those were on deferrals, not on exemptions. So then the fund is repaid when the deferral is up, and usually there is then some settlement on the estate when the property is sold in the future. This looks like it would be an outright exemption, so it would so if you're exempting it, you're not expecting to collect it. That's going to be the impact on the local government in that respect, unless the state fund that I was referring to earlier were to step in. I have a couple of other concerns, though, about the bill, and I think because of time, we didn't get a chance to discuss this or bring it up. And that is, in Section 3, it talks about, particularly starting on line 28, that the assessor is going to notify each taxpayer that they can make application on an unsealed postcard. It then goes on to say that claims, starting down on line 37, that claims would include some things, and that the information should contain the taxpayer's name as it appears on their Social Security card, their Social Security number, the birth of the taxpayer, and the lot of number or numbers or the identification for the taxpayer's principal residence. The problem with that is that if all of this is sent out on an unsealed postcard, anybody can pick up that information, and now all of a sudden we have unwittingly been the purveyors of increased identity theft.
If I can respond quickly, Representative, to that in Section 3, it does, from my reading of this, Section 3 sub 1A is talking about what needs to be, what is the claim must be made in writing. Jump over B for a second and go to subsection 2A and the requirements listed below. I believe these are requirements that are listed as required by the claim itself, but the postcard is what is sent to the taxpayer, letting them know about their claim. Right. I think it's a legitimate concern to make sure that a county or a district would not be sending back the information on an unsealed postcard.
I certainly hope not.
Yeah, it's a definite concern.
I do want to make sure that that is
that
is not the case, because if that information is sent in an insecure manner, then I think we've got a major problem.
Right. That's an excellent point. We do have legislative counsel has joined us. Thank you so much. Would you be kind enough to come forward? And Representative Compton, do you have a question?
Well, my only thought was sometimes a bill like this could possibly be moved to revenue with no recommendation.
That is correct.
If we come down to that point that the fiscal impact is weighing on us with too many unknowns.
I appreciate that, Representative. So thank you for joining us today. We had, as Mr. Olson might have explained on the phone, we had a specific question as to the constitutionality of separating one group of taxpayers from another.
Yeah, Chair Buckley, members of the committee, I'm going to start with this with a little bit of a caveat. This is not a bill that I drafted. The drafter who did the bill is out ill today, as is our other tax experts in the office. Having said that, but I'll give you my best opinion for today.
Introduce yourself for the record, if you would.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cindy Hunt, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel and not a tax expert.
Thank you.
Okay. But having looked at this, generally what this bill is distinguishing on is based on senior citizens and persons with disabilities. So as long as you have a rational basis for doing that, and I'm assuming with this bill that you do, then I don't see a constitutional issue. If you'd like a further exploration of those issues, I was encouraged, like if this gets passed on to revenue, for example, you could talk to some of our tax experts, who I assume will be back by then. But in general, I don't see any constitutional issues with this.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Greenlee.
You have to define that rational basis in the bill.
No. Chair Buckley, Representative Greenlee, that's been defined by case law. And basically, rational basis can be anything from, it could be because you view these folks as having less income, for example, as groups of individuals that you want to help out. I mean, it's very, very broad.
Does have less income, but the question is, why not everybody under 32,000? Why just elderly under 32,000?
Mm-hmm. Chair Buckley, Representative Greenlee, I do know that in the tax code, a lot of times we distinguish based on, for example, taxpayers in certain circumstances. So I don't see this bill as any different from any of those.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions for legislative counsel? Do you have a copy of the bill?
Yes,
you?
I do.
Representative Cremel brought up a question on Section 3, on page 2, whether the language concerning the unsealed postcard, whether that would in any way, the bill would require the information that the claimant provides for the county, whether that information would be sent back to the claimant, would be required to be sent back, including the taxpayer's Social Security number, is the concern.
Sorry. Chair Buckley, could you give me the line number that
Here,
you were...
We're looking at really all of Section 3, but the main concern is line 41 has the Social Security number of the taxpayer, but it's just trying to get a grasp on Section 3, which does talk about a form being filled out with the county assessor. Subsection B has a language about an unsealed postcard being sent back to the taxpayer.
And the unsealed postcard part is on line 31. And
it does appear to be just notice, but the concern was that this would somehow...
Mm-hmm. Chair Buckley, Representative Cromwell, I must admit this is the first time that I've been reading Section 3 of this bill. But from what I can tell, it talks about the notice being given on an unsealed unsealed postcard, and the part about the Social Security number seems to be the claims for exemption, which I'm assuming those would be sent in some sort of sealed or secure envelope.
Mr. Chair, if I may, is there a chance, and I assume you probably can't answer this question, but is there a chance that, county assessors in there sending out notices to people because they've got them identified by tax lot number and Social Security number and a variety of other things? Is there a possibility that unsealed postcard going out to somebody to tell them that they might want to apply for this would have information on it that we would not want to have released in an unsealed manner that then subjects a person to potential identity theft?
Chair Buckley, Representative Cromwell, I don't know the answer to that question. I think that's a question for maybe the county assessors or the Department of Revenue. I mean, I do know that when I get my notices from the Department of Revenue, they don't have personally identifiable information. I mean, they don't have that on it that's viewable to the general public. So.
Any further questions of counsel? Representative Dollar.
Yes, and as I read this, and the threshold is $32,000. Right now, if I could move my interest income
to some sort of a living trust and drive my income below $32,000, would I be eligible for this tax deduction?
You're going to have to tell her whether you're over 62 or not.
When I get old.
Representative Olson has a response, I believe, here. Mr. Olson, sorry.
Legislative Council may have further, but it cites in the bill, it cites the income has the meaning, and it cites the ORS. And in the ORS 310.630, it defines income as, quote, adjusted gross income as defined in the Federal Internal Revenue Code. And it goes through to list a great deal of things that are covered.
Right here. Yeah. I have it right here. And there are quite a list of things there, but I don't see any that are me. So if I can get my income down to $32,000 and get my interest income diverted somewhere else, a person over 63 would be eligible.
Yeah, Chair Buckley, Representative Dahlem. I think it depends on that definition of federal income and whether or not what you are saying, you know, would be counted as income.
The answer is, you meet that federal guideline? Sure you would. Why not?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I would point out that it says household income. That means that anybody that is in the household that has an income the household income is calculated on that. So the total household income would have to be less than $32,000.
That is correct, Representative.
As I read the qualifier,
dealt with this issue on the in another issue. And so I've become very familiar with the household income versus individual income versus gross adjusted income versus all of the other identifiers that are there. And then within that also, the Department of Revenue has the authority under the tax code to write rules that describes what all is applicable as far as the household income is concerned, and you would be shocked to find out some of the things that are that are applicable as household income. So it's a very complete list, and I mean, but the key there is that it's a household income and not individual income.
Well, simple answer, yeah. You need to get it. What's the problem?
Any further questions?
I wanted to ask a question. I mean, all this time.
It doesn't have wealth. It doesn't have the value of the home, for example.
No.
This could be that Ashland doctor with a 17,000 square foot house.
Yeah. Not with the subsidies that we're paying him to do his work.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Lim,
my just imagination. I have a $1 million house. I'm a 62 years old over, but even though house free and clear, $1 million there, but I have only income, $32,000. Then I don't have to pay any taxes on the $1 million I own free.
No. You pay your basic property taxes. This is additional taxes above your existing property tax.
Above, what are we talking about?
Yeah, it's only,
only above. Where is the above?
Just local option.
It's local option.
Oh.
So many communities in the state that are eligible for local option. It's not every community that has that ability.
Only after these are local options after 2008. Any further questions for Legislative Council? Thank you so much for coming to visit us and provide information. I appreciate it very much.
Nice to see you.
Members, are there further questions on the bill?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kremel.
In the first section, it has, starting on line one, it has a definition of a dwelling unit. And it means a structure or part of a structure providing complete independent living facilities for one or more persons, including permanent provisions for sleeping, eating, cooking, education, and the land supporting the structure, yada, yada, yada. A house with a granny flat, or what is becoming known as
a mother-in-law suite.
There's also another name that's now escaping me. It starts with an A. senior moment, you know.
Another mother-in-law suite.
Yeah. Marriage number two.
There you go. Yeah, marriage number two. I'm trying to figure out how that would, if a person did have a granny flat, whether or not that would have any applicability to the property taxes, but it probably wouldn't. I'm guessing, as I'm thinking through this out loud a little bit, it probably wouldn't, because the property taxes are probably paid on the unit in its entirety, not just, and you would not be able to parcel out the different
portion. It says it's only the portion of the residence that the senior person lives in.
Right.
So they would have to parcel it out.
But I'm not sure that the tax assessor actually differentiates between the two when you have.
It has to be the owner. It has to be
the one. Yeah. But it says it's only the part that the owner lives in.
Oh, interesting.
So if you have a nephew living in that wing, I assume they have to apportion the property tax among those things.
Yeah,
at least.
Okay, maybe it's an issue that doesn't.
Because occupy means to live and dwell in the property.
And revenue.
My thought when I was reading that was that what they did there was that person could have less than $32,000, and they don't have to be considered a member of the household, because you could have two households within the same spot, but both of them could be under $32,000, and then they wouldn't have to pay it. But you wouldn't have to consider them both as household income, and that's why they partitioned it. So if you had a granny living over here and she was $20,000, and I was living on my other half of my house and mine was $30,000, we wouldn't have to combine the two of them to make it
separate household incomes. It was considered two households.
Wow. Gotcha. That's how I read that, but I couldn't see it. So it would then affect some.
This is good. I found it in legislation.
Okay.
I can hear those comments there over. Thank you
for adding that bit of color to it.
any
That's a very bipartisan guy.
Any further discussion on this bill?
Do we have any motions before us?
Vice Chair, we're in a work session. We do not have a motion before us.
Chair Buckley, I move the -1 amendments into House Bill 3295.
Vice Chair Comp has moved the -1 amendments to House Bill 3295, or discussion on the amendment. Hearing no discussion. Is there objection to the amendment? Hearing no objection, so amended.
Yeah, my people will be happy.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3295 to the House floor with due pass as amended and a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee by prior reference.
Vice Chair Comp wants to give this problem to the Revenue Committee. She moves House Bill 3295 to the House floor with due pass as amended recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee by prior reference. Discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative
Greenway.
Aye.
Representative
Kopp.
Aye.
Representative Trumbull.
Aye.
Representative Groveland.
Aye.
Representative Benton.
Aye.
Chair
Buckley.
Aye. The motion carries.
Aye.
And no, we don't need to carry because it's going to revenue. Okay. Representative Kremel, between the two of us, let's see if we can keep track of this and get the question answered on the unsealed postcard part of this. And it will be interesting to see how this comes out in terms of what the impact could potentially be on districts. Thank you, committee. We have House Bill 30. I'm going to call. Did I close the work session? Did I close the work session on the House Bill 3295? I'm going to open the work session on the House Bill 3344.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3344, which the full committee heard on April 16th in public hearing, allocates money from the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund to the school capital matching subaccount amount by which the monies in the fund available for allocation in each biennium exceeds the amount projected to be available for allocation. Declares an emergency is effective on passage. You have before you a dash one amendment. It would add the West Side lottery bonds and the lottery bond funds to list of funds that are required to be paid before determining if there are excess funds in the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund. I note that House Bill 3344 has a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. And one also note, since we had a lot of bills that day, this was discussed about the same time we discussed House Bill 3480, which likewise took money to go from the Economic Development Fund to the Capital Matching Subaccount. 3480 was the one that had specific green standards on buildings. This one does not. So that was sort of the main difference between the two, one of the main differences between the two bills. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Committee, I'm going to just temporarily close the work session to offer the same courtesy to Representative Clem that we did to Representative Wisnett earlier. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3344, and I would entertain a motion to suspend rules so Representative Clem would be allowed to vote on the earlier bills. There is no motion.
I said so moved.
So moved.
I was there for my wife's birthday party. How about if sorry?
Oh, okay.
Representative Greenlick has moved to suspend the rules to allow Representative Clem to vote on the two bills, was it, I think it was? The earlier bills from this session.
Dublin and I object.
I didn't bring any cake either, did I?
Just for the heck of it.
Without objection. Andy, which bills do you rip? Two or three?
It was House Bill 3338, House Bill 3179, and House Bill
3178.
Boy, he's been profligate.
Representative Clem, how would you like to vote on House Bill 3338?
If I would have known it was them.
Yes.
House Bill 3179.
Yes.
House Bill 3178.
Yes.
Representative Clem has recorded aye votes on all three bills. Thank you, committee, for your courtesies to Representative Clem. At this point, I'd like to reopen the work session on House Bill 3344. And we have the dash ones there. Mr. Olson has already explained the bill. And at this point, is there questions, discussions? On this bill.
Can I ask a simple question?
Representative Greenlick.
What is this bill doing?
Mr. Olson, do you want to get
the kicker for schools?
We do have Mr. Johnson is here from Representative Hunt's staff, too, if you'd like to. Would you like to come up, Mr. Johnson, and answer that Representative Greenlick simple question?
While he's coming up, I can just clarify, Mr. Chair, that my understanding is it's designed to augment the school capital matching funds by continuously sending money, excess budgeted money from lottery to the school capital matching subaccount. I think Ms. Hepper or Mr. Johnson might be able to explain a little better.
And I assume that's as opposed to sending it somewhere else.
It would be taking it out of the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund. It's in excess of what is budgeted.
Excess of what is budgeted. That's the key.
Now I know the answer.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Welcome, Mr. Johnson, Ms. Hepper. Thanks for being here. If you identify yourself, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, for the record, Dana Hepper, Stand for Children. I think what we'd like to do to this bill eventually when it gets to the Ways and Means, well, I'll speak for Stand for Children and then Joe can speak for Representative Hunt. But I think because we added the line games last year and because retailers saw a bump in profits after those line games, there was then a provision in their contract that lowered their rates once they saw a bump in revenue. And we'd like to use that, you know, unanticipated revenue to put some money into the capital subaccount, which never has actually seen any, and never actually had any money in it. It's whatever, when the Education Stability Fund spills over, it goes into this capital subaccount. And the Education Stability Fund, as you know, is never filled up, so it's never spilled over to the subaccount. So we'd like to use that additional revenue in this subaccount. And so I think the education community members that I've talked to.
Can that money be taken out by the Ways and Means process without a statute? Without a bill? Is that money otherwise available to Ways and Means?
Excellent question, Representative.
I don't know the answer.
We don't know the answer to it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kremel.
Generally, the money would be available to, in the Ways and Means process, for whatever use that the committee and subsequently the legislative bodies, House and Senate, decided that they wanted to use it for. And the reason why it would is because it's unallocated within the resources that are required, such as the 7.5% that goes to parks and 7.5% that goes to wildlife preservation, the 15% that currently goes into the Education Stability Fund, and then there's another piece in there that goes to something else, and everything else is supposed to go to quote-unquote economic development. But that economic development has been very broadly described by the legislature, which is its purview to do under the Constitution. So what this is doing then is saying that you're going to take a certain amount of whatever, if there's more money than, it's kind of like a kicker for schools, more money than what was allocated and what was forecasted to come in comes in, and then those dollars would go in into the subaccount for building new buildings and that sort of thing.
Representative Bell.
Yes. Do you have any idea what the tolerances in this money have been? I'm sure there's been underestimates, but the overestimates. Do you have any notion what's the dollar value we're talking about?
Chair Buckley, Representative Dahlem, Dana Hepper, for the record. We think that this will be somewhere between $20 and $25 million this biennium because of the addition of the line games, the drop in retailer rates, that there's more unanticipated revenue this biennium than typically. But I think there are some other things considered in the legislature that may affect that. I mean, I think they anticipate there to be some interplay between, you know, banning smoking in bars and lottery revenue and that kind of thing. So,
Mr. Olson,
Mr. Chair, Representative Dahlem, I have a draft revenue statement from the revenue. I didn't distribute it because it's based on the original bill. Did not take into account yet the Dash 1 amendments because, again, they have so many bills going on at the moment. Prior to the Dash 1 amendments, which of course certifies more funds that need to be paid first, they had 2007, 2009, $45 million. But they emphasized that this would be lower once you take into account the funds that need to be paid in the Dash 1 amendment. So I would say this would probably be the ceiling, but it would be under that, maybe more in line with Ms. Hepper's numbers, but they didn't have exact figures for us yet. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So it's sort of like the money that could go in for OHP standard or something like that.
Representative, I was going to ask the same question. Representative Kremel, maybe you can confirm this for me. But when we had special session last year, this was the money that we were allocating to schools, right? This is the above projected revenue from the lottery. Is that correct?
Yes.
Went to schools last year.
That was correct. It was $45 million of that. That we allocated.
So Representative Greenock's point is correct, then what we're doing with this bill is that we're designating, saying it's the belief of this policy committee that the revenue this time around and hereafter, because I don't think it ends, but no, it doesn't. So we're basically saying it's our policy decision that the revenue from this point on should go into this subaccount for school construction. Do I have that correct?
That's correct, and it would begin on July 1, 2005, or with the biennium that began July 1, 2005. So the current biennium that we're in right now, if there is when the biennium's over, if the amount of money that came in on the lottery is over what was forecasted, then that overage is what's going to go into the subaccount.
I want to follow. Just a clarification, I think as you were saying, the 0507 has already been appropriated to the state school fund for 0507. That's what the revenue folks. So this will start from the 0709. According to legislative revenue, what they said is the 0507 revenue above forecast is about $45 million, but most of this has already been appropriated to the state school fund in the 06 special session, as you were previously discussing.
Right, you're right.
And I just want to answer what I think to be the case directly with Representative Greenlick's question. OHP standard, unless you can make some connection that it has to do with economic development, it probably couldn't go directly to there. However, because that's where all lottery money other than the one that goes to Safe School Fund. Other than that, yes, you can give it to something you were going to put in economic development and buy the money back to the other. So it can get there through going through the process, but it isn't. I don't think it could go directly to that.
Representative Wisnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of course, I support this bill. I'm hoping that we can use some of it in Central Oregon. But there's no discussion about a cap. You know, if we keep, we don't want to put so much money in there it's not being utilized or something. So, I mean, I don't know if we need to, you know, after a certain period, if it just keeps building up, then we'd have a problem.
Thank you, Representative Roman.
From my perspective, that would be a nice problem to have. we've had a fund that we help when school districts in the past, when school districts build new buildings, that they would pay for some of the stuff that you're going to put in the schools afterwards, the chairs and the desks and the things that we haven't had. This fund is kind of done with that. It was up to 50%, but the reality is because of all the requests that come in, most of us are lucky to get 10%. So. We have never had enough money in here to help the school districts that are really trying to grow. And with a number of growing school districts, I would expect that the request for this certainly will outweigh any of these funds. But I understand that there could be a
matching,
point.
So, I mean,
yes.
So if it builds up here, we're not using it for Oregon Health Plan or whatever else, then that's
rich. And since it's a statute, I think we could always come back if that became a problem. But I understand what you're saying.
Representative
Lynn. Thank you. I just want to... do we have another bill that is sponsored by the Representative Hunt?
This is the last bill on our agenda for today.
Yes, I know. I'm talking about the others that the 0.5% of the market value of the property could be borrowed and bond about up to $2 billion for the capital construction. Are you familiar with that bill? If that passes, then we might not need this one.
No, Joe Johnson, and I'm on Dave Hunt's staff. That bill is the one where it permits the state to engage in bonding, but there's no real source of income yet. The hope that there would be some down the road, and then the source of income in that could then be used for bonding. But the income flow into that is going to be, again, very limited. There's so much school construction. What you're trying to do is put a package together that provides small amounts of money to provide some assistance. So, yes, if there was a huge cash flow, you could borrow up to that amount, but there isn't going to be.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. President
Dahl. Last year's excess income was allocated to the schools. Do we have any idea where this money has gone in the past? Who are we?
I believe it's. I thought it's always been to schools.
President Dahl.
I don't really have an answer to your question, but as witnesses just have stated, the influx of additional income has come from the, you know, moving on for the online games. So it may be, I don't know.
I know we've had a kicker in good times, and it would seem like as good as our economic forecasts are that we would have had this excess money before.
My belief is that we have, I don't think there has been a year that there hasn't been more than anticipated in lottery. I think it has grown above.
It seems like when we toured the lottery,
they
are a high-performing operation.
My only guess I could make is because the lottery is designed to go to economic development and schools and parks, it went to those places. So, and I don't know which one. They might have been an economic development thing that went to at one time, but.
Was there a problem?
Well, it has been used in some other general fund areas under the guise of economic development.
Economic development.
But there's been dollars that have been put into housing. There have been dollars that have been put into special public works funds, which are funds that local governments use to develop infrastructure. There's been a variety of other areas that lottery dollars have been utilized.
Creative ways.
Yeah, I have a couple of concerns about this, and so I I mean, I'm not going to stand in the way of the Dash 1 amendments being adopted, Mr. Chair, but my intention is that after the Dash 1s are put into the bill is going to be to oppose the bill. And the primary reason is twofold. One is that we have HJM, I believe, at 17, that's going to come to the floor tomorrow. It was carried over from today. And that is a constitutional revision that would allocate bonding authority for the state to then make available to the K-12 school districts for matching funds, that the bonds would be paid for from the state out of the general fund or whatever other means the legislature decided that they wanted to pay for with. And I'm leaning towards supporting that particular bill, although it's a constitutional revision as opposed to a constitutional amendment, which means that it requires 40 votes out of the House and 20 votes out of the Senate. That way it doesn't have to stand up to Armada. The other, and so I want to see what's going to happen with that. The other reason is that the lottery really gives us a cushion, and we have through the will of the voters, and that's fine. Whether I agree with the voters or not is not relevant. What's relevant is that they've spoken, and what they've said is that they want a certain amount of the money to go into the Education Stability Fund. They want a certain amount of money to go into parks and other factors. And I fully respect that. I think, though, that what this bill is going to do is that it's going to start nipping away and tying our hands to where we can't, as the legislature, make other decisions. And the other thing is that where we have the bonding bill that I'm leaning up in the House that I'm leaning towards supporting, is that in addition to K-12, we've got to figure out what we're going to do with higher ed and with community colleges. And right now, I mean, you know, we're putting a lot of our resources into K-12, and we're sort of ignoring higher ed. I view it as being the same mistake that we've made in transportation, which is we ignore all of our highways and roads and just do some basic maintenance and put all of our resources into light rail in Portland, and consequently, you can't drive across the state without hitting potholes that are as big as a damn building. And so I think that by ignoring higher ed and putting all of the dollars into K-12, we're kind of going down that same road, no pun intended. So for those reasons, I'm going to oppose the bill, Mr. Chair, but I also recognize that there is most likely a majority of the committee members that feel that this is a worthwhile bill and that it should move forward, and so be it.
Thank you.
Fine America.
Representative.
I just want to share the same sentiment. And then already a lot of the funds have been used, majority of it, for the education fund and plus many others. Is there any additional funds available which should be reserved as a rainy day funds? And a lot of so the legislators can use that money for economic development or additional education fund, just dedicating this portion continuously to that area. I don't believe it's the prudent approach. We already have a bonding obligations from the lottery for many different projects. I think we should keep it as it is without dedicating this additional fund to this special program.
Thank you, Representative. Other thoughts?
I'm going to be a no as well, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick.
Oh, yes, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at supporting the governor's formula. And if we go there, I have 61% involved in education. And I am an educator. And we'll use the 61%. And as I said to the person that preceded me, go over to Idaho and get some of theirs, too. But I am concerned about when we come to hard times, how we're going to bail out Health and Human Services, how we're going to do public safety, how we're going to address these other issues, and I'm losing a cushion here that I think the constitutional change might better address. So I'm going to be a no also.
Bakers and Sepner.
Thank you, Chair Buckley, members of the committee. I just want to make it clear that it's Stanford Children's intention to have this be a one-time allocation, and I know that's not how the bill's written, and maybe we can look at amendments for that, but have it be a one-time allocation because of the bump this year that I know hundreds of Stanford Children members and probably many of you worked so hard to be a part of the writing of that contract and, you know, filled a room last year on spring break full of schools advocates advocating for lower rates for lottery retailers because it was really quite a boondoggle program before that. And so I think because of all that work, wanted some startup investment in this capital subaccount, which has never had money in it before. And Oregon remains just a handful of states that provides no state support to building public schools. Washington has a similar kind of capital subaccount that receives some of their lottery dollars. It receives some dedicated funds. It receives some general it has a variety of funding streams that go into it, as well as some local tools that we're working to pass out this legislative session, such as, you know, with either a capped construction tax or a capped impact fee that local communities can utilize at the local level. But we think this is maybe the first step to Oregon taking a serious look at our public school facilities and being a part in contributing to making sure they're good places for kids to learn.
Thank you. Representative Hunt, welcome. We've been having quite a discussion about your bill. I did on the phone last night, too. I hadn't heard of any problems with it, but there have been problems raised. And so we wanted to give you a chance to address it. In a nutshell, the concern being that with this money available from the lottery, the basic question is this the best possible use of the additional revenue given the needs of other education needs as well that this might be able to go to. So I don't know if you'd like
now,
to respond. Or
thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt. I think anytime we make decisions to dedicate funding, they're always very difficult decisions, which because it means setting priorities. There is actually another bill that was drafted for this session that would actually take a percentage of the lottery, of the base lottery within the projections that come out each biennium, that would go to K-12 capital construction. And I will tell you that has an enormous amount of opposition from certain of my friends, although I happen to think that's still a good idea. This, I think, is because it is, as I assume you've already talked about, Mr. Chair, because it is the increment above the projection of what is expected from the lottery. It's difficult, I think, to say that money was destined for X or Y. That money was destined for other education programs. That money was destined for economic development, when in fact it's completely outside of any of the projections that have been made for that biennium. I start with the assumption we've got a serious problem with K-12 capital construction needs across the state. It's true in low-growth districts because they've got buildings that are aging and falling apart and in need of repair. It's true in high-growth districts because they have those same buildings, plus they need to build additional buildings. And I happen to represent three districts, one that fits in the low-growth category and two that are very high-growth. So I see the identical situation both. We've got a huge need. We've got no ability for local districts to step up and fund that need, which is why you can see them getting jammed into buildings beyond capacity and them deferring maintenance like crazy. So if you start with the assumption that I do, that there's a huge need and the state has a responsibility to help with that, then it's a matter of talking about where do you come up with funding. I personally would love to set aside a percentage of lottery. I didn't see the support for that. This, in a small way, I think begins to deposit some money. It's not a consistent source of revenue because it's not something anybody can count on. We don't know when the projections are going to be off. But in those years where they are off and we have a bounty, an extra surplus of money that comes in to fulfill something that I think there's broad bipartisan acknowledgement that is a huge need around the state. that we need to step up and help local school districts with. I think it's a very worthy thing. If there's other suggestions, you also will acknowledge this is one of a package of several bills, but it is, anytime we're talking about actually dedicating some funding for K-12 capital construction or anything else, it's a very difficult topic because there's always a sense of, wow, I'd like to have access to that money to do something else, whether we're talking about state police or health care or education or higher ed or whatever it is. But I think this, of all the dedicated funding sources, I think this is, this, at least from my perspective, is one of the easier ones because it's not something we can count on. As opposed to a percentage of lottery, we know that's going to be budgeted and fought over. This being increment above the projection, at least for me, I think makes it a much easier sell. But I'd be happy to take any of the flack that you have been taking.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Dahl?
Well, yeah, I guess Representative Hunt, I'll ask you. The amount and the concept of capital construction, when I asked the amount, it's $45 million maximum. And I think our figures were somewhat under that. And as I understand the account is targeted because we had an initiative some 10 years ago that said when you built a building, you couldn't furnish it with capital construction bonds. So this money would be primarily targeted for furnishings. Having built a small high school and knowing what the furnishings were, I'm concerned, one, about the amount. I do share your concern of getting started. I do have some concern about when hard times come, having some pots we can go to or having some place to go where we can get at some extra money. That's my concern.
And Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Dallum, I think, first of all, on the starting point, and maybe I missed something in the earlier discussion, the intent is not to have this focus just on furnishings. The intent is to put the dollars into the school capital matching subaccount, which actually was created by something the legislature referred out and the voters passed in 2002, I think it was, September 2002, when the Education Stability Fund was set up. They also created this matching subaccount, and eventually dollars from the Education Stability Fund, once it fills up, will roll over into that. It hasn't filled up yet, so there's zero. They created the account, they, the legislature, we, the voters, in 2002. But there's no dollars in that. This would actually deposit at the end of the biennium some dollars into that account. Those dollars today could be spent on capital needs, helping school district space, not specifically limited to furnishings. It's limited to things that it's limited to K-12, and it's limited to capital. Couldn't be used for operating. Under a bill that your committee, I think, has already passed out, if I'm remembering correctly. I expect it's supposed to be on the floor today. It'll be on the floor tomorrow. It's GR 13. The state would have the ability to bond the dollars that are in that account in order to maximize. Instead of, you know, if you get $20 million in there, to try and spread $20 million out around to match some of the capital needs in our districts, it'd be a drop in the bucket. Whereas if you can bond that money and spread that out, you have greater capacity. This would merely put money in that same account. It's not a different account. It's not a furniture specific account. So maybe we may have some miscommunication on the furnishing issue. But
we have never had any money in this account, so it's never been used that way. What this legislature has done in the past, on a few occasions, has set money aside for capital improvements, but only after you've done something, and they ended up helping with materials afterwards. That's the only kind we've ever helped with.
That's further discussion.
And that was a special fund separately set up a few biennium's ago. I can't remember exactly when it was.
That was not this fund.
Not this fund. It's been one twice. This fund has never been used because it's never had any money in it. I was saying, but when they did the other one, it's never come out. They would pay up to X amount, and it's never paid the amount because so many people have asked for it, but it's always been 10% or 5% on the of what they'd expect.
And I might say, Mr. Chair, Representative Roman and Dallum, I think, in fact, that money still exists in the current biennium, and I think the capacity is so big out there, I think the percentage is going to be down to like 1% or 2% or something in terms of matching. So, yeah, but that, so therefore, it won't even get to any capital needs.
Right.
Representative Lim.
Thank you.
While we are talking, I lost my thought. Anyway, were you able to talk to the director of the lottery, what they think about this bill, and concerning the current obligations we have on the lottery bond, how healthy it is, and also the second thought, what was your name again?
Dana Hepper, Stanford.
Yeah, Dana mentioned instead of permanent funding going in there, maybe a one-time deal might be able to help. And any thought on that?
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim.
I'm asking the representative.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Well, I can answer the second part first. I've not talked to folks at the lottery because they don't. I mean, I'll give what I think is the answer, and then she can actually give what's probably the correct answer. because they're not, as they're looking at projections, they are actually looking at the projections they come up with in terms of gauging their debt service needs. So because we're talking about that increment that is above what they are projecting, this shouldn't have any impact on their debt service projections at all. If we were talking about dollars that were below the projection, which might be another bill at some point in the future, then clearly you're talking about some impact on the debt service capability long term. In terms of one-time versus permanent, I think it's based on the updated projections, I think it's clear that there are going to be some dollars at the end of the current biennium, because the projections were just conservatively low. Although I think clearly doing it one time would be better than doing nothing. I just think the policy holds, the need holds. It's not like we're going to have a one-time need in terms of these capital dollars. And if we are in those years where we are low on the projections, I just think it makes sense on an ongoing basis to put that into K-12 capital construction. If we had any hope of catching up with the capital needs anytime in my lifetime or my kids' lifetime, I'd be more cautious about putting a cap on it. I just don't see that's likely to happen. But I think you may have talked to Lara.
Yeah, just to add, Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, Stanford Children has had conversations with Dale Penn at the Lottery Commission and Inga Deckert, who works here in the building. And Dale Penn doesn't have a position on how the lottery dollars should be used, but helped us come up with the projections, making an estimate of what would go in this fund if this bill were to take place. And then Inga Deckert told us that we're pretty maxed out on the lottery bonding, the bonding we could do off lottery dollars overall. But if we have the general obligation bonding and the sub-account set aside, that we could do additional bonding safely and not hurt our bond rating in any way.
So just my comment, Mr. Chair, I think, was it the SJM 13 we are going to pass today and postpone tomorrow? And I think that's the 0.5%. As I read it, it's going to up to $2 billion of bonding for capital construction. And then that's I'm willing to support. But as I read this, and I don't think it's prudent idea taking the extra money away instead of legislators can do that in this coming biennium.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, I think if you think about HGR 13 that will be on the floor tomorrow, that allows the state to bond those dollars in the capital account, and you think about the action the legislature and the voters took in 2002, they really just created the pillars upon which dollars could be set. Neither of those actions actually create any dollars to fund K-12 capital construction. This bill would actually be the first depositing of dollars into that account. Fortunately or unfortunately, the lottery is doing well enough that the Education Stability Fund is growing at a good pace and will ultimately be up to the 5% of the general fund cap. At that point, maybe in 2009 or 2010, additional dollars will flow in. But as we think about HGR 13, which I think is a good pillar, and what the voters did in 2002 with the Education Stability Fund and creating this capital sub-account, Both those were really just foundational issues. Neither of them put any dollars in. And I just think our school districts are crying out for us to both create the pillars and actually put dollars on top of them to be able to serve these needs.
Just one more comment, may I?
Representative.
I'm sorry.
No,
Chair. My concern I have, currently the lottery revenue going up after inception, the line game, I think it's going to max out, in my opinion, and this go up, and it could not, it could go down. Then if it's continually go down to some degree, then we might have some problem, bonding obligations plus others. So instead of looking at every year, whenever it comes up into the separate account, we need to keep it until a certain time, make sure the lottery amount continue to grow, at least not dip. When we have some extra amount of money, we might be able to put that when we don't have enough money in the lottery. So that's one of my also concern. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move dash one into the bill.
Wisnett makes a motion to add the dash one amendments to House Bill 3344. Is there further discussion on the amendment? Hearing no discussion, is there objection? Then so amended. And members, I would, if with your indulgence, I would move to, I'm going to close the work session here. My sense of the committee is that we don't have the votes to pass this bill. Currently, and I will close the work session to allow for further discussions amongst members, and Representative Hunt, if he cares to converse with members, is happy to as well. So I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3344, and I'm not sure whether carry over or not. If it carried over, we'll carry over until Monday.
Are you not voting for it?
At this point, I'm not sure.
Oh. Well,
thank you very much for asking.
It's on the record.
Thank you very much, members, for your contributions to the discussion. If there is not anything else for the committee, I'll close the committee hearing for today. Thank you very much.